Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum.
Hoo-wah!
The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us for the second hour of the show on this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We'll discuss precious metals with Forrest Hamilton. Then Army vet Jeff Nelligan will discuss his book on raising kids. And Teresa Robinson will introduce a female veteran. So it's a pleasure to introduce my friend Forrest Hamilton from Universal Coin and Bullion. Most of us have noticed the huge inflation over the past few years. Inflation, in my opinion, makes precious metals more valuable. At least I think so. Anyway, that's why Forrest is here, because I'm guessing and he knows. So we want to be sure we stick with the facts. Welcome, Forrest. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here, Colonel.
How did you get involved with precious metals? I mean, that's not something I grew up knowing anything about. What's your story on it?
Oh, without getting too long in my explanation, I grew up in Washington State. No running water or electricity till I was about 15 years old. I had a Vietnam veteran dad that went off the grid when he came home to a not very welcome experience when he came back. And so he delivered me in the woods and, whole 9 yards out there in the mountains. And I remember early, though, that, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, but he treasured the real silver and gold, that he had in his life. And that was the only time I ever saw him. He didn't care about paper money. He didn't really care about, you know, the things like the IRS, which you probably, you know, got to be careful of these days. But he taught me early that silver and gold were real money. And then I had the great fortune of working at 17 years old. I moved to Texas and started working at Universal Coin, back in 1994, and got in very early. And I think when I started, silver was about $5 an ounce and gold was about $250 an ounce. So, from my dad's upbringing to a very early start as a teenager, I learned quickly that, silver and gold are real, very real money.
And if you'd bought or someone had bought a whole lot of gold from you or silver when you first started, they'd have a lot of money now, wouldn't they?
They would be doing very well, keeping up with inflation and then some.
I can remember I have been buying odds, occasionally some silver and occasionally some gold, no particular plan. But I remember one point about 30 years ago, maybe a little more, that I bought some gold at about $200 an ounce. And I thought that was awfully expensive. And then I remember about 5 years later, the word was going up to $1,000 an ounce. And I was sure that would never happen. But I didn't sell it. And so I made some wise choices. I just didn't have that much of it. So talk to us about precious metals. Obviously, you grew up with it, but generally speaking, it holds its value, or at least its purchasing power, or is that the same thing?
No, that's a great differentiation. You know, value can be dictated by what people believe, but purchasing power is just that. It's how many goods and services, you know, can an ounce of gold buy? And if you look at history, at almost any point in history, gold will buy roughly the same amount. And so, you know, you go back to 1933, before Roosevelt recalled the gold. And, you could have bought a men's suit for a $20 gold piece or a $20 bill. And I'm talking a nice suit, you know, tailored. And today a $20 bill might buy you a pair of socks in the men's suit, you know, store. But that ounce of gold will buy you $2,000, almost $2,400 worth of a suit, which is nicer than any suit I have. And so that's what we call gold as inflation proof. And, that's how that works.
You know, that makes sense. And I think that's the kind of guidance I got from different people as I was buying occasional things. And silver, well, it's obviously worth less per ounce than gold. And other precious metals fall into the same category, don't they?
They do. My primary recommendation, whether you're doing this as an inflation hedge, a hedge against dollar devaluation, a hedge against just rising cost, which, there's so many different ways to and reasons to invest in gold and silver, sometimes as an investment, as a preservation of wealth against the falling stock market, whatever it is. I generally funnel things into three categories: gold, silver, and then certified gold. And then those are the three areas. I don't recommend a lot of platinum or palladium, rhodium, you know, things like that. I just feel like those markets are a little too fickle. They're very industry based. And if you get on the wrong side of them, you can lose a lot of money. But silver and gold, they've been around since the second chapter of the Bible as a means of trade. And I don't think that's ever going to change on a global scale.
Well, that certainly makes sense to me. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Forrest Hamilton about gold and silver. So, and silver coins, I graduated from West Point in 1964. In 1964 was the last year that quarters were all real silver. So therefore, I made it a point of trying to get as many of them as I could. And I hang on to them or give them as gifts to my West Point classmates. So coins used to have a lot of silver in them. They don't anymore. So a silver dollar today is not, or is it the same as a silver dollar before? Are silver dollars today silver, or are they some mixture?
It's a great question. Yeah, it's a great question. So you're right. 1964 was the cutoff. And there was a sort of a sneaky way to remove real value out of our change that's in our hands. So dimes, quarters, half dollars, and dollars, 1964 and before, had 90%. They were made up of 90% silver. So a $1 piece would have had, you know, 9/10 of an ounce. So 90% of it was pure silver back then. Today, just as a rough average, it's a little more than this, but we'll just say silver is worth about that. We call that junk silver, which is a funny term because it's anything but junk. But any silver that's 1964 and before is worth at least 20 times the face value. So if you have a silver dollar from back in the, you know, 1950s, it's worth at least $20, if not more, for what the date or the grade, things like that. Whereas a dime is worth $2 or more. After that, they removed it, and now a quarter has exactly zero precious metal in it. And so, yes, I think that that's a good way. The only problem with getting too much of that, if you're doing it as an investment, you know, it can get pretty heavy. So, you know, you mentioned modern silver dollars, for instance. Today, a silver American Eagle made by the U.S. Mint, U.S. government, is not 90%. It's 0.999 fine. So it's almost essentially 100% silver. So when you buy a 1 ounce silver dollar today for roughly $33, $34 at today's price, for instance, from us, you're getting a full ounce of silver at that time. But if you bought 500 of those, which is, we call that a monster box, we're talking 45, 50 pounds, and it's very dense. The joke is my survival silver killed me when I tried to carry it. So you just have to be conscious when you're investing, you know, what's the right thing for you. I think that you can have too much of a good thing. And so sometimes it's smarter to concentrate your wealth into gold, depending upon how much you're looking to invest and protect.
Okay, that makes sense. We're about out of time. How can listeners who would like to get more information from you on this, how can they reach you?
Sure. You can check out our website, www.universalcoin.com. And that'll give you plenty of videos, lots of great award-winning literature, things like that. But the best way to reach us is by phone. We are a personal relationship business. That's 1-800-248-2223. Anybody there will help you. We have 5 different trading floors, and we'll assign a representative to help you specifically. And then you can also reach me at ForrestHamilton@UniversalCoin.com, and I'm happy to get you some help.
And I recommend it because Forrest is the guy I use, and I've dealt with precious metals for decades. I've never met anybody that pays more attention and has better ideas and solutions than Forrest. So that's why he's on the show. And when you do call Universal Coin, be sure to say Frontlines of Freedom. Forrest, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for sharing your insights. I'm proud that we're friends and are working together.
It was an honor, and I appreciate all you do, Colonel.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bend. Go halfway down each time, do at least 50. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
Unexpected situations do happen. Our nationwide network of self-defense attorneys is always ready to defend you in a criminal and/or civil case. There are zero attorney's fees for covered events, and no hourly limits, caps, or deductibles. That means no matter how high your attorney's fees are, they're all covered through your low monthly membership payment. Join US Law Shield today and receive immediate coverage, affordable, customizable membership options, and peace of mind.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Army vet and author Jeff Nelligan. Jeff's a public affairs executive in Washington, D.C. He's also the dad of three great sons, all of whom are graduates of college and serving our nation. And how all that happened is not an accident. Well, welcome, Jeff. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Colonel. Thanks for having me. It's a privilege to be on Front Lines for Freedom.
Jeff, start by telling us about your time in uniform. When and why did you join?
Certainly, Colonel. I'd always been fascinated by the military. My dad was a vet, World War II, Pacific. My grandfather was a vet, Army, World War I. Cousins and uncles that served in Vietnam. And I just, all the values of the military so appealed to me. You know, the camaraderie, the accountability, the necessity for follow through. So when I was old in the scheme of things, at 29, I enlisted in the Army Reserve and went to Fort Benning for basic combat training and then ultimately joined a reserve unit in Fort Meade. And later on, I would transfer to the Maryland National Guard. But everything that I found in the military from the first day at Benning was something that just was so appealing to me.
Okay. And you served, and apparently that was part of what you instilled in your sons. You know, raising great kids, everybody wants to do it. But you describe in your book is in some ways just good leadership. And your approach is really good. It's rare that I find something that works for everybody all the time. But there are some fundamental things that seem to work almost all the time. So talk to us. How, from your experience, how do we raise great kids?
You bet. And I like the way you put it, Colonel, you know, fundamental truths, fundamental values. And, you know, I kind of go back to the military allegory. You know, every guy or gal in the service, whether E1 or 07, always wakes up every day with a plan and a strategy and the tactics to move those along. And my strategy was I wanted my kids, all three sons, to be just have those, to use your word again, fundamental values. And I saw those as just personal courtesy and conduct and confidence and resilience and adversity and then ambition. And so rather than let the culture raise my kids, which is what's happening today, I had a defined plan from day one of how I was going to build those values in my kids. And at the same time, I would give them tests early on that would help them, you know, gather in all those values and start to live them. Like something you kind of mentioned before we were talking, to have that muscle memory, not to have to think about anything when they were out in the real world, but just to have that reflex to do the right thing.
You know, and that makes real sense. If you have time to think something through, that's one thing, but much in life doesn't fall into that category. And if you don't have some kind of a plan, you're going to wing it. And the younger you are, talking about kids, despite what most of them think they have, they don't really have a lot of wisdom yet.
No, they don't. And that's why when I always talk to parents, I say they call it parenting, not childing. And our responsibility as parents, Colonel, is it's not really to build a relationship with our kids. We already have that. Our duty is to have our kids, to teach them to build a relationship with that real world that outside the front door every day. You know, the mall, the Home Depot, the barbershop, the community, the neighborhoods, the successes, the failures, school, athletic fields. Our job is to make our kids be able to operate in those environments with just total confidence. And again, that follow through. And today, I don't think that that's the case. I think today, parents, beginning with all of Gen Z born, you know, pretty much around 1997, 96, and the youngest millennials born previous to that, they're letting their kids' lives be shaped by the what I call the glowing rectangle, by social media, digital media, you know, the interweb, phones, screens, laptops, tablets, whatever. Parents are abdicating the parenting mode to that. And, you know, that sounds like, well, you know, it's the Colonel and, you know, Specialist Nelligan here with our generational snark. But the fact is, the numbers to prove that are there. I mean, a typical kid 10 to 18 spends 8 hours and 47 minutes a day on a phone. And that's unbelievable. And that's more time than they spend asleep, and it's more time than they spend in school. And that doesn't even account for what they do on their computers with schoolwork. So right there, you have a major problem.
And it's pretty obvious. And if nothing else, you want to instill in your kids, it's values. And how can you do that if you aren't doing that consciously, intelligently, with a plan doing that?
Correct. What replaced, what in, you know, 20 years or 15 years ago, took up 8 hours, almost 9 hours a day for those kids? Well, it was being around their parents, being around their friends, being in peer groups, maybe just, you know, outside doing anything. And so when you get that kind of time spent on a screen, then of course you get the other manifestations of this breakdown. You know, close to a half of all Gen Z report that they're almost constantly depressed or feeling hopeless or in despair. That's half of that generation says that that's what they're feeling when they're living day to day. 21% of them are either obese or overweight. And so this has ramifications just beyond, you know, the Colonel and Nelligan talking about how bad this generation is turning out, you know. I mean, I look at all these stats all the time. And the key one that I see that just absolutely is stunning is that one, that when young adults out of college go to an interview with their first hiring manager, 35% of those kids bring their parents to the first interview.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. You have your parents sitting there next to you in an interview with your first hiring manager, your first job. So again, I go back to, we can talk about it, but the numbers are inescapable. They're there. And so the things, the anecdotes that you and I see and that other people listening to Frontline see, they're borne out by the statistics. And so I wasn't going to be caught in that trap of having to culture raise my kid. I ensured that I would raise my kid.
That makes sense. This is Colonel Denny Gilliland, Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Jeff Nelligan. Jeff, you've got more than one book out, but the book that I just got through reading was Four Lessons from My Three Sons. How can listeners buy a copy of that book or mention a couple of your other books?
Certainly. All my books are available at my website, www.nelliganbooks.com. And on that site are another book about how parents can help their kids get over the ravages of the COVID lockdowns, the quarantines, the school closures, all these tremendous mistakes made now that we know with no data to support them. And that book's called Your Kids Rebound from Pandemic Lockdowns, A Parent Guide to Restoring Your Family. Another book is about my political career in Washington, D.C. I was fortunate to work for 3 members of Congress and get 2 presidential appointments with the State Department and HHS, Health and Human Services. And I've worked on national campaigns all over the country. So that book is called Tales from the Swamp. And that's about what I learned spending about 35 years in American politics.
Well, there's certainly lots there. And I hope a whole lot of my listeners are volunteering and getting active in political campaigns of people they know and support. That's another thing that we need to do at some point. Jeff, thank you. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your story about your sons, the values that you shared, and the fact that it's available in a book that is an easy read. And it really just tells us things that we thought we knew anyway. It's awesome. Thank you for that book. I just can't appreciate it enough.
Hey, Colonel, thank you. And, you know, with three sons who are military officers and who have been in for now going on 6 and 7 years, you know, those kind of values that they have, I know that they're transmitting them to the enlisted guys and gals that serve with them. I hear about it all the time. So the good thing is it's being paid forward by my sons to these people who are young, some with children. And so it just continues, you know, that path forward of, hey, the right thing, you know, is easy to do if you've grown up doing it all the time.
Yes, sir. Thanks again, brother. We need to stay in touch. We very much share the same values. Thank you.
All right, Colonel. Hey, thanks for having me.
So coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Teresa Robinson will introduce another female veteran. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillow on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice. To take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HealthVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HealthVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Veterans have a unique perspective on healthcare, foreign policy, and federal spending.
Concerned Veterans for America provides veterans and the military community a chance to share that perspective and drive change that will make Americans safer and more prosperous.
Want to join the movement and the thousands of activists in our grassroots army? Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a real pleasure to welcome to the show our team member, Navy vet Teresa Robinson. Teresa introduces us to female veterans, and we hear their story. Welcome aboard, Teresa.
Thank you so much, Denny. I appreciate that welcome. I did serve in the Navy in 1974 to 76 at NAS Miramar VF-124. We trained Top Gun pilots. It is my honor to be here again, helping to give a voice to female veterans. Female veterans have proudly served people of the United States of America. We continue to serve in all branches of the military and at all levels. And today I am very proud to welcome Kathy Gomez, who served in the United States Army. Welcome, Kathy.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Kathy, can you take a minute and tell us a little bit about where you served, what your job was, maybe the years that you served?
Well, I enlisted in 1973, and I had my basic training in Anniston, Alabama at Fort McClellan.
I was
part of the Women's Army Corps, which no longer exists now. I had my AIT at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio, Texas, and I became a medical corpsman, also known as a medic. I was then stationed for the rest of my term, actually, in Landstuhl, Western Germany at the time. It's now just Germany. And worked at Second General Hospital, which is a large support hospital in the middle of USERER, which is United States Army European Division.
And you say you were a medical corpsman.
Mm-hmm.
In the nation, what was going on at the time?
Well, it was the tail end of the Vietnam era. So most of my patients that I worked with were stationed in Vietnam and were injured. There was a lot of dissent from a lot of people in the United States didn't support that conflict. But I'll tell you what, these guys went through a lot. And it was heartbreaking for me to see what they went through and how their families reacted to it. But most of the time spent there was just dealing with military and support. We did medical evacuations, both in the Mediterranean area, as well as those from Vietnam.
Wow. It must have been very interesting, at the very least.
Very busy, yes.
I bet. Do you think that joining the military was a good choice for you when you did it?
Oh, absolutely. My father was in the military during World War II, so he had talked highly of it, even though his experience was rough. Yeah, he was an island hopper in the Pacific. But for me, it was training, it was discipline, it was a lot of knowledge, it was direction. I can't recommend it enough to people that don't know what they're going to do with their lives. It gives you a lot of skills that you never realize you're even getting that you use the rest of your life.
I was going to say, somebody gives you, what I hear from a lot of veterans is someone gives you we're taught, here's your mission. You do whatever it takes to complete your mission, and then you move on to your next one. And
that's true.
And you carry that on in the rest of your life.
You become a problem solver without ever realizing it. And those skills are invaluable.
They are. Do you think that you were treated as an equal with your male counterparts? Or do you think there was a difference?
Well, there was a big difference. And not that it was bad, it was a sign of the times. For instance, toward the tail end of my service, I was married and I was about to have a child. I wasn't given the option of staying in the service like women are today. Back then, they automatically started the paperwork to discharge. It was an honorable discharge. It wasn't bad. However, it wasn't equal. You know, men don't leave the service because they're having a kid in their family. You know, they make arrangements. Somebody else watches the kid when they have a deployment. Right. That was one thing. Other than that, it wasn't a lot different. There were other things, but small, you know.
And do you think the men that you served with, did they treat you well while you were serving with them?
Yeah, very, very much so. I was in a hospital environment, and it was like working a civilian job almost to me. The one thing that was different, like I noticed, was like one day I'd go to work. I worked on a medical floor most of the time. But if they needed somebody in emergency, they would pull you and you'd do that. If they needed someone to do a medevac, you'd go hop in a helicopter. They were in charge. You were not in charge. And you learned to take orders and you learned to be a team player. And, you know, that was a buzzword back in the 80s and 90s when you'd go for a job interview. Everybody talked about team player. I'm like, the Army invented team players. You know,
they did.
You worked at a team, you know. I wish our politicians could understand that, because you can accomplish so much more working together. And the military has it down to a science.
There's no room for I in the military. It's all about we.
And exactly.
What we're going to accomplish and what we're going to do. What's interesting to me is we just did an interview previously with an Air Force nurse who the thing that she talked about was the opportunities as a nurse to do so much more than she could do in the civilian world as a nurse. And you were just talking about being hauled up on a helicopter, going into the emergency room or doing, you had probably as a medic, were able to do many more things that most people in the civilian world at your level have ever done.
Yeah, absolutely. We were taught some pretty serious field medicine, like how to create an airway with a can opener and stuff like that. Things that, you know, maybe EMS people learn some of those things, but they get to carry pretty good tools with them. We're taught to fix that person up, how to do a sucking chest wound with your medical ID or your driver's license or a credit card or, you know, things like that. They still stand out in my mind like, oh my gosh, we really did do that stuff, you know? And it was expected that you did that medical triage in the field. And, you know, I remember growing up watching the TV show MASH, and that's exactly how it was, you know?
Yep. Yep. What kind of roles do you think that women should be serving in in the military? Do you think it should be just the nursing roles and the clerical roles?
Oh, definitely not. Women have good brains like every man on the earth. I think they need to be in a role that they're comfortable with. And I think, like any other job, you don't want to put somebody in there that doesn't know what they're doing. You don't want a mechanic that doesn't know how to fix the vehicle pool of vehicles necessary to use. You want someone who's trained well in the area that they're comfortable in.
Well, I agree with that wholeheartedly. And women are, once trained, men or women, you get trained, you're good at the job, give them the job.
Well, and like any other part of society, there's women that are good at some things. You surely wouldn't want them maybe making your dinner, or you wouldn't want
correct,
sewing your clothes, whatever. But it just depends on the individual. I mean, every person is an individual, and you need to capitalize on their skills.
The military needs to understand that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kathy, I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing some of your experiences. It is by doing this that we educate the American public that we as females have served our country.
Thank you. I appreciate it. As a veteran, I often get overlooked. My husband and I will be walking together. He's also a veteran. People will thank him and he'll say, oh, my wife's a veteran too. And they'll say, oh, and they'll just keep talking to him. And it always cracks me up how often the women get overlooked as veterans. So I appreciate this.
Well, Denny and I both appreciate you being on here today. Thank you so much. And thank
you for
your service to our country.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. I really am delighted you joined us. And thank you, Teresa, for bringing us another great guest.
You're so welcome.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups now. How about 64 this time? I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease. It's that time of the year again. The U.S. Mint is making their new 2024 American Silver Eagle and American Gold Eagle coins, and there's no better time to shore up your investment in precious metals than now. Call Universal Coin and Bullion at 800-UCB-GOLD to get great prices on the finest gold and silver coins of the year. I work with Universal Coin and Bullion because they're a company that you can trust. So give them a call at 800-UCB-GOLD. That's 800-UCB-GOLD, or check them out at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is our final formation of this week for Front Lines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. You'll be glad you did. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Navy vet Samuel is surprised the Secret Service head wasn't fired, but allowed to resign.
Samuel, there's clearly no one in charge of the entire area where President Trump was speaking. That alone is grounds for firing. So I agree with you.
And Amanda, a Marine Reserve vet, says it's clear that our nation's military doesn't have a commander-in-chief right now and won't until January. that is scary.
Amanda, you are right on. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 7 August 1782, during our Revolutionary War in Newburgh, New York, General George Washington, the Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army, created the Badge for Military Merit, a decoration consisting of a purple, heart-shaped piece of silk edged with a narrow binding of silver with the word merit stitched across the face in silver. The badge was to be presented to soldiers for any singularly meritorious action and permitted its wearer to pass guards and sentinels without challenge. The honoree's name and regiment were also to be inscribed in a book of merit. That badge has become the Purple Heart.
It has indeed, and I don't know the story of that. Okay, on 9 August 1813, during the War of 1812, after reports that British naval vessels were nearing St. Michael's, Maryland, to attack the shipbuilding town that night, the county militia placed lanterns on the tops of the tallest trees and the masts of the vessels in the harbor and had all the other lights extinguished. When the British attacked, they directed their fire too high and over the town.
I wonder, Colonel, is there any modern day, like, you know, 20th century stories like that where it actually worked?
I don't know.
I think our technology is a little bit better now.
Well, yeah, good point there.
And on 5 August 1815, a peace treaty with Tripoli, which followed treaties with Algeria and Tunis, brought an end to the Barbary Wars.
And on 5 August 1861, the U.S. Army abolished flogging. Wow.
And on 9 August 1918, during World War I, following the lead of countries all over the world, our government ordered automobile production to halt by January 1st, 1919, and converted to military production. Factories instead manufactured shells, and the engineering lessons of motor racing produced light, powerful engines for planes. Manufacturers turned out staff cars and ambulances by the hundreds. In fact, World War I has often been described as the War of the Machines.
And on the 7th of August, 1942, during World War II, the 1st Marine Division began Operation Watchtower, which was the first U.S. offensive of the war. They were landing on Guadalcanal, one of the Solomon Islands.
That was a rough fight.
Mm-hmm.
And on 6 August 1945, during World War II, Hiroshima, Japan, was struck with the uranium bomb Little Boy from the B-29 bomber Enola Gay. The atom bomb killed an estimated 140,000 people in the first use of a nuclear weapon in warfare. The bomb is a uranium fission weapon, and the yield is in the region of 20,000 tons of TNT. 60% of the city was destroyed in the blast and the firestorm that followed. About 80,000 Japanese were killed. Many more were severely burned, and others became ill later from exposure to radiation. It was not the most devastating bombing attack of the war, but the economy of the effort involved in sending only one plane on a mission to destroy a city shows only too well the complete change in military and political thinking which had begun.
I'm glad I wasn't there. And on 9 August 1945, we dropped a second atom bomb on Japan at Nagasaki, resulting finally in Japan's unconditional surrender. The devastation wrought at Hiroshima was not sufficient to convince the Japanese War Council to accept the Potsdam Conference demand for unconditional surrender.
And on 7 August 1964, Congress overwhelmingly approved the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, giving President Lyndon Johnson nearly unlimited powers to oppose communist aggression in Southeast Asia. The resolution marked the beginning of an expanded military role for the U.S. in the Cold War battlefields of Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia.
And on 7 August 1990, President George H.W. Bush ordered the organization of Operation Desert Shield in response to Iran's invasion of Kuwait on August 2nd. The order prepared American troops to become part of an international coalition in the war against Iraq that would be launched as Operation Desert Storm in January of 91. To support Operation Desert Shield, Bush authorized a dramatic increase in U.S. troops and resources in the Persian Gulf. And that's military history for today. What would you do if you were forced to defend yourself or your family? These situations can happen to anyone, so it's important to be prepared. In addition to being the worst day of your life, you can face a large amount of legal bills. Even if you're in the right of a self-defense situation, there will almost always be an investigation, and you can find yourself in the legal system. It's just the way the law works. This is why U.S. Law Shield was formed. They are here to help people through events who never thought that would happen to them. With their Legal Defense System program, experienced attorneys are always ready to defend you 24/7, 365. To begin your membership today, go to uslawshield.com or call 877-448-6839. That's 877-448-6839. And use the promo code FRONTLINES. Okay, now it's time for the self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat, but if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, Sunjung Kim, the owner of a Hair Plus beauty supply store, noticed a female customer shoplifting fake eyelashes and eyelash glue. Kim told her to return the items or pay. Instead, she tried to run away. Kim blocked her path, and the shoplifter began punching at Kim, so he punched her back and kicked her. The shoplifter then tried to pull a gun, so Kim tackled her. A gunshot rang out, but no one was struck by the bullet. Kim took away the gun and held the shoplifter for 11 minutes until police arrived. The shoplifter was charged with first-degree armed robbery and was being held on a $75,000 bond.
Thanks, Colonel. This unfortunate incident raises a lot of issues, which I find disturbing. So let's dive right into it. First, I would have a really tough time getting into a fist fight with a woman, no matter what she was stealing. It disgusts me to see people stealing, but I don't know that I could punch a woman in this scenario. I'm not judging the store owner for what he did, because it's obvious to me that the thief deserved a good thumping, but hey, I was raised differently. I can't tell you how many times my father told me, never, ever hit a girl. On a more personal side note, I was attacked by a woman once, and she punched me about 6 times. Because of my upbringing, I didn't hit her back. I just covered up as best I could until she was done. I ended up with a few bruised ribs, but no lasting damage, and I didn't have to hit her. Now, if a woman comes after my wife or kids, then that's a totally different story. I wouldn't hesitate to punch a woman in that scenario. No one messes with my family. And if a woman pulls a gun or a knife, well, then that changes things too. Second, I watched this video, and it's truly amazing. As soon as the man started fighting back, she pulled a large pistol out of her purse and tried to shoot him. Fortunately, he was able to tackle her and disarm her. But here's the thing. That woman was willing to kill a man over $20 worth of beauty care products. That tells us all we need to know about the content of this woman's character and the condition of her heart. And finally, after searching the internet, I found out the store owner was wearing a t-shirt with Korean words on the front, which translated into Korean Special Forces. I think this woman picked the wrong man to rob. All right, here's the deal for me personally. I was raised to never hit a girl. But what do you do when a woman hits you first? I think it all depends on the context. That's why we need to think about scenarios like this before they happen. You men out there, ask yourself this question. When do you think it's morally right to hit a woman? 50 years ago, we wouldn't even be asking this question. But the times, they are a-changing. Frontlines of Freedom is relieved that no one was seriously injured in this incident. This woman is a little roughed up, and she'll have some time behind bars to think about what she did. And the man, well, he's already gone on record as saying he would handle things differently next time. What do I say? Live and learn, and all's well that ends well.
Well done, Skip. And by golly, the next time I need something for my eyelashes, I know what not to do. Our movie of the month is Alternative Math. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments about the movie. Send your comments to me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Israeli Defense Reserve Major Elliot Chodoff will join us. Then we'll talk with that great supporter of injured veterans, Tunnels to Towers. And co-host Roland Ashby will share a contact he made at the Oshkosh Air Show. And Marines, vets, Gil, and Skip will share their comments about the border and a book. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. It's now available in Spanish, You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active at correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.